Assalamu alaikum. Peace be with you and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, what effects the UK's counter-terrorism strategies are having on academic freedom?
British Home Secretary Theresa May accused universities of complacency over campus extremism. However, university vice chancellors across the country have warned the governments that the clamp violent extremist speakers on campuses could lead to renewed freedom of speech rows. Counter-terrorism officials are reported to have identified 40 universities to be at particular risk of radicalization. Critics say that the link to government's counter-terrorism strategy targeting radicalization on campus could fuel Islamophobia. In this episode, Islam and Life will investigate what the effect of the UK's counter-terrorism strategies are having on academic freedom.
There is indeed an anti-terrorist strategy coming from the UK government. In fact, around the Western country, throughout the Western country, what we can find is the same strategies coming. In the UK, in the United States of America after September 11, it was very difficult to know which kind of freedom is protected within universities. We have even campus watch when professors and students were too much pro-Palestinian. They were listed and monitored. And now in Europe, we have the same phenomenon, and especially in the UK when we have new rules where we don't exactly know what are the limits when a student or when a professor, when a lecturer is studying terrorism or radicalization, which kind of protected field is he or she going to have when it comes to a study, an area of study or field work. And these are questions that are very important because we are touching something which is the essence of universities and academia, which is freedom of expression, freedom of researching, for example, and trying to understand what is happening on the ground. When this is connected to policies and strategies coming from governments and monitoring those who are studying, we have a problem. So these are critical questions that we have to ask, and to answer these questions, I'm joined by Rizwan Sabir, an anti-terrorist researcher and a victim of counter-terrorist measures while he was studying at the University of Nottingham. Thank you so much for being with us. You have watched the clip. And I was introducing this program. I think that we are facing a very critical question here, because when a professor, a researcher, people who are writing books on reports are dealing with the field, radicalization, terrorists, how are they going to be protected? And it's as if some are protected because we think that they have nothing to do with it, and Muslims researching on Muslim activities are potentially suspected, and it happened to you as to many others. So can you start by telling us your story, and also which kind of atmosphere you can feel on the ground?
I think it's very important to start off with one very simple point, and that is that in the current day and age that we live in the United Kingdom, and some of the very deeply draconian powers that we have, and the extremely wide-ranging kind of wording and remit of the counter-terrorism legislation, no Muslim who is researching, not even necessarily researching, but is just curious at looking at issues to do with political violence, political Islam, or any kind of other Muslim political activity, is not safe. And I say that from, firstly, my first-hand experience, and secondly, by looking at some of the policies that have been formulated. And what better case study to take than my own story, where I was researching Al-Qaeda and Hamas, looking at the kind of military tactics and how they were affecting their political ideologies, or vice versa, and how they affected one another.
You were researching for
I was researching
a master's?
A master's at the time. It was for a dissertation. And during that process, I was also applying for a PhD. Yeah. At this time, a very a good friend now of mine, Hisham Yeza, was helping me draft my research proposal. And we would often discuss and liaise with what kind of structure to adopt, and you know, what would make the most nuanced study, and what would be the most valuable in terms of contributing to this field. And one day, I walked onto campus, and I saw activity outside of Yeza's office. And when I went to inquire, after a few minutes, or I should say after about half an hour, I was arrested as a terrorist. And I was taken into custody and held there for 10 to 12 hours before finding out that Yeza had been reported by the university management because he had three academic documents on his desktop, all of which are available from any interlibrary loan service in any British university, available from Waterstones, Amazon, Blackwells. All these institutions and all these bookshops provide all this material. It was nicknamed the Al-Qaeda training manual. It was downloaded by myself and sent to Yeza during whilst we were conducting our research. This is what the management reported. The police came to arrest Yeza. Why did they arrest him? If this would have been found on a non-Muslim's computer, would the same powers have been used? No.
But it means two things here. That first, and we got that, we heard that before, it's not new. We had the discussion, you know, about students and activities and the campuses that the management of universities should monitor and say what are the activities. And we had even reports published saying that we have, you know, increasing radicalization on campuses and this has to be checked out. The second thing which is important is that the universities and the management of the different universities in the UK, but not only, by the way, in the UK, we have this now spreading in other countries and other universities. I was talking about the United States of America. It's very worrying. But the universities are asked to check, in fact, what the students and the lecturers and the professors are teaching and doing. And it means that they were following some regulations. At least it seemed, and this is what we heard, that the university was doing what was expected from the management to do, is to report. This is second, and there is clearly a lack of trust between the management and the students and the professors and the lecturers. So how do you see these two problems? Because I think that this is the starting point of a problem here.
I think it's very, firstly, it's very important to notify or to take note of the fact that university managers are administrators. They have no experience and have no kind of expertise in how to deal with what constitutes potentially illegal behaviour, because that's essentially what it should boil down to. We shouldn't be on our university campuses in Western liberal democratic states criminalising and targeting peaceful activism, legitimate human rights concerns, or any kind of other personal non-violent opinions and perspectives. But the problem is that the universities have been put under pressure where they feel they now have to report non-violent ideological persuasions or any kind of, especially Muslim, political opinions. And that's a really, really big problem, because these administrators are not qualified to make these judgments on what constitutes illegal behavior or what constitutes acceptable form of arguments or ideological
persuasions. But would you say that it's right to do it if they were qualified to do that?
No, absolutely wrong. Academic dons are not, should not be doing that.
Okay.
That is the job of the police.
Yes, but the point is, neither they were qualified to do this and knowledgeable enough to know what is the substance. And the second is the in principle, I would say that working in a university, this is not what I would expect from the government to ask me to do. And then even the management of the university should not do it on our behalf. So there is something which is the substance, the essence of what academia should be, is betrayed.
Absolutely. And that's the nature of the strategy that we are dealing with, where it has no respect for the concepts that are historically affiliated to universities and Western liberal democratic states. But I think it's very important to note that, you know, people will argue that, you know, the government has issued guidelines to universities, so universities will follow those guidelines and they will behave proportionately and only report what needs to be reported. That's not true. And you look at the University of Nottingham case, when myself and my friend were arrested, there was government guidance which categorically stated what steps should be taken in order to prevent the police being called and to see if the matter could be dealt within internal grounds. But the university ignored that guidance. But the university was allowed to ignore that guidance because there's no accountability mechanism in the United Kingdom. So universities may report anyone to the police for either terrorist behaviour or terrorist intent, or somebody who's moving towards, going on the conveyor belt theory, what they would argue, and becoming terrorists. And they can report them, but nobody can ever hold them to account for their actions, because universities in Britain are totally free to do what they want. There is no accountability mechanism, and that's the most dangerous thing, I believe, of securitizing our institutions. Not only is it in wrong, like you said, in principle, of, you know, expecting university professors and managers to do this, not only qualified, but there's no accountability, so they can get away with it. Racism, discrimination, Islamophobia, misconduct. no lack of respect, a lack of respect for due process. Hmm. They can do this and not have to bother.
But one, what when you have government saying, no, look, we have this, you know, the guidance is clear what we are expected by the university here. It was a question of mismanagement. In fact, they went too fast in the case by saying, you know, there is a there is a question mark here about what you were doing and what Hicham was doing. So it might be, in this case, do you see it as a policy which is problematic, or just in this case mismanagement?
No,
were,
I think
they
I
were
think
they were mistrusting both of you, and then they went too fast.
It's incompetence, bureaucratic incompetence most certainly plays a part, and I think it's unfair not to mention that. But I also think it's the mindset where Muslims are seen through this angle or this lens of suspicion. They've been securitized. So a Muslim could be involved in legitimate academic research, could be in possession of a very, very legitimate open source library book. And if a non-Muslim had that in his possession or her possession, it would be no problem. But because that mindset is the problem, when a Muslim is encountered and they have possession of this material, somehow it's, oh my God, this must be a terrorist. And because it's that, there's this kind of urgency, well, you know, there's a potential terrorist plot being hatched here and we need to do something about it. So therefore, you can totally forget the concept of due process or proportional response and you just rush ahead. But because it's Muslims, nobody is there to stick up for them. Islamophobia is not a recognized issue. If you say it's racism, you say, well, you're just because, you know, somebody took a wrong decision. It's not. It's deeper than this. And that's why Nottingham is such an important case.
Yes, it's an important case. But and also, if we get a broader picture, the point is exactly this one. This pressure is pushing some of the Muslim students not to tackle or to study very critical questions when it comes to radicalization, violence, and to put this into context. They are the more, they are not the more, but at least they are equipped. They can understand the religious teaching from within and try to just that, to study this objectively. Now they are just shying away from that, these fields, just to do other things, because this is the where they are not getting mistrusted in anything that they are doing. And at the same time, we have also things that are happening, which is quite problematic, is that when a Muslim professor is teaching about Islam, his or her objectivity is questioned.
Absolutely.
While we have this with Jewish, we even have rabbis teaching and priests and Christian and people who are specialized in their field. They are teaching Christianity, they are teaching Judaism, they are teaching other religions. But when it comes to Islam, there is so much prejudices and mistrust that this is what we have. And this is where, as a student, I think that we, and professors, we have to respond to this, not by disappearing from these fields, but to do exactly the opposite.
We need to question it.
Yeah.
And we can only get to it is by firstly challenging the system within which such abuses and prejudices are allowed to go unchecked.
How would you do this? Within academia?
I think it's a systemic problem, not only within universities, but in British society or European society. We know it's pretty well catalogued by people who are much more have much more expertise on the rise of anti-Muslim discrimination throughout Western Europe.
Yes, but within the civil society it's difficult because it's emotional. The people are scared. Islam is being presented as a threat.
But that's not in isolation. This is the point.
I agree. But within academia, this is where, if there is a place where we have to struggle, to strive against these kind of prejudices and emotional reaction and fears, this is within academia. And still we find difficulty.
Because the tragedy is our universities are no longer universities. They are corporate businesses. The whole point of them is not to give people the ability and to critically examine and engage within what people usually associate with university and academic institutions, but it's about bringing in people in large volumes of numbers, equipping them with a certificate at the end of it so they can go and apply for a job. It's that corporatization of universities. And
is it the last struggle?
What do you mean, the last struggle?
A lost struggle. Yes.
No, if it was a lost struggle, I wouldn't do what I do.
No, but the way you are talking about university,
no, it's very difficult.
I would say this is the place where we have to start.
Absolutely.
In order just to this is where the governments should hear voices
Sure, but
of
the
people
the,
saying, yeah. No, we are not going to accept this.
I think that's a very important point that you make, is that we have to reclaim our universities,
yeah.
and make them into the bastions of, you know, rationality and understanding, and use them for what they are associated with. Mm. And that is not, you know, these business corporate models, which inexperienced and non-academic people are running it, who have no idea what's going on in academic circles.
Mm.
The minute we can start off with universities, because remember, universities are where knowledge and books and you know, the theoretical kind of understandings of these issues comes out from. And I think universities are a key aspect, which is also why a lot of people who I would define as having an axe to grind against Muslims, for whatever reason, not solely because they're anti-Muslim, but because it's strategic interests or wider foreign policy issues, pay such an important role to universities, because they know the significance of universities.
Mm.
And I might be accused of sounding like a conspiracy theorist, but I believe that if you prevent an understanding developing of an issue, then you almost prevent a certain action being taken according to that theoretical kind of understanding.
Yeah.
So if you prevent the research, no one can act on it.
Yes, but so the question now is how we can have a constructive approach, being constructively critical towards what is happening within university, because I'm myself teaching within the university. It's still an open space. We find very bright students, very bright colleagues that are trying their best. So how can we, and many of them, non-Muslims and atheists and agnostics, they don't like what is happening. They say it's very dangerous. In fact, this is a threat through academia to the whole society, because it's really preventing us to study what should be studied. And these are very critical topics when it comes to radicalization. Why this violence? Why these people, so to speak, are violent? So what would be the step, the next step, to go beyond only just being disappointed with what is happening within the university and
solution.
To be constructive? Yes.
I think the first solution would be to examine the legislation which allows people to be incarcerated for some of the most innocuous and innocent of activities, such as conducting research. That is very important. We need to challenge the structure, the counter-terrorism structure in the UK and Europe-wide that allows abuses like this to happen. But secondly, I think it's very important to ensure that universities are truly independent of the state. So we, you know, I understand that everybody has a responsibility in order to prevent people from being murdered. I totally support that.
Yeah.
But by stopping somebody from gaining an understanding of political, Islamic, ideological concepts is not the same as preventing violence.
Mm.
So I have a real problem with prevent, because prevent is not about catching terrorists.
Mm.
It's about manipulating Muslims into believing that, you know, taking up arms is wrong, which it's not wrong, not by, you know, not, this is not a theological argument. This is an international legal argument to say the right of self-defense and self-determination is the right of any person in that situation. So by prevent going in, you're actually allowing that to happen. So we need a clear and categoric boundary between state securitization or university securitization by the state. So I think these are two crucial points.
But the problem is upstream, the feeling within university, but in fact it's the same in the civil society at large. It's really a question of mistrust. That in fact, the very moment you start studying this, if there is no trust between, you know, your fellow citizens, your fellow professors, lecturers and students, you are not going to make it. It's not possible. Because at the end of the day, if you are nonviolent and you are studying violence, it might be that your non-violence is a potential violence.
As a Muslim, you're always
exactly,
potential.
Exactly, the potential is there, and you face this. So I think that how do we think?
But that's just a racist perspective. You can't.
No, but within
it's an
academia,
racist. Oh, well,
within
I mean,
academia, there
this
is
a really good point, because recently I've realised is that somehow racism is only associated with the working class. People within a country who, you know, people...
And with ignorance, which is not the case.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there is another concept to it. And, you know, the Stephen Lawrence inquiry brought this out in terms of the Metropolitan Police, where there is a form of institutional racism. And that is that white collar people who you would not expect wearing ties and shirts being institutionally racist.
Mm.
And I think that's a real problem and that needs addressing.
Mm.
But is that institutional racism towards Muslims or institutional Islamophobia a problem? And I would say that there it's a growing problem. And if you look at some of the Nottingham's a key case study because a lot of material has been released, but even the pro-Palestinian peaceful protests that have taken place or anything to do with Middle Eastern issues have all been logged. Yeah. Why have they been logged?
Anything which has to do with boycotting.
People selling cakes have been logged by university security. And whether that's been passed a special branch, which I believe has happened, you know, why is this happening? This is peaceful activism. But there's no respect for that anymore. Yes. So I think you need to kind of...
No, I think it's important, but I also think that the best reaction for students and teachers and lecturers and professors is to do the opposite of what this atmosphere is pushing them to do.
Absolutely.
It's not to disappear.
Mm.
It's to tackle these issues, is to study radicalization, is to study Islam, is to be professors, lecturers, to be students,
sure.
and to be... Because this intellectual visibility and contribution is the future. And the perception is that I see too many students being scared of this atmosphere, and some of the professors and even the teachers being, oh, if I want to get the job, I better... remained far and from any of these topics.
I totally understand that.
So yes, this is what is happening.
Yeah.
So would it, your answer to this, a very quick answer to this, do you want to carry on? Are you going to continue this? And how your story could be a symbol for others to follow?
Well, it's very difficult for me to answer that without sounding almost arrogant.
No. with all humility.
Are you sure? But, I mean, I will carry on because this is all I know now. I have used one negative experience to try and ensure that I can be the best person and to try and create an environment in which others can you know, understand and critique without being arrested and incarcerated and branded as people who are potential terrorists. So I believe I have a responsibility of doing that. And I forgot the other half of the question, but I think we're just in time.
No, thank you so much. I think it's a very important question, and the situation in many universities, not only in the UK but in Europe and around the world, is just showing that now students and professors should stand up for their rights within academia to study freely, to research freely, and at the same time to be visible as Muslims and to do it with a serious academic background. I think that this is also something which is an important step forward, visible and serious within academia, just to respond to some of the government's policies that could be dangerous for all of us. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programmes. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programmes, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Rizwan Sabir. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I hope to see you next week, inshallah. So we have to-